Okay, so I just added a couple words here. I want to make clear that I'm talking about geometrically thin disks, and these are disks with radial stratification, so all the other stratification that's been discussed this week has been vertical stratification. So the motivation for studying this was to investigate recent claims of a local hydrodynamic instability in radially stratified Keplerian disks, an instability that Klar and Bodenheimer referred to as the global baroclinic instability. So they performed these global simulations of disks with a radial entropy gradient, a gradient that would be locally unstable to convection in the absence of shear. And they find, even in the presence of a Keplerian shear profile, that the flow breaks down into vortices, and they measure an outward flux of angular momentum. And the claim is that this is due to a local convective type instability. So such a mechanism could be extremely important for understanding accretion in these low ionization disks, which are stable to the MRI, since it's a local transport mechanism that doesn't require magnetic fields. The results are surprising, however, since the shear rate in Keplerian disks is much higher than the growth rate for convective instability in the absence of shear. So you would expect that these convective fingers of fluid would be sheared apart before they have time to grow. So our goal was to test these results in a local model and answer the question, is the global baroclinic instability a local instability? And it turns out this just missed getting on the top 10 list for this week. So here's the question phrased in more physical terms, is convective instability stabilized by differential rotation? So the first thing that we did was perform a linear stability analysis, and this is a summary of the results in parameter space. This was a shearing wave analysis, so due to the background shear in these in a local differentially rotating disk, the linear perturbations are naturally decomposed in terms of shearing waves, which have a time-dependent wave vector. And so this is showing the asymptotic time dependence of these linear waves. The vertical axis here is the square of the Brunt-Weisler frequency in the radial direction in units of the omega squared, the disk rotation frequency. And that's given by this expression here, the sound speed squared over the entropy and pressure length scales in the radial direction. And the horizontal axis is the effective shear, which is approximately equal to minus d log omega d log r. And there's an additional effective shear, in this case, due to the radial stratification. The ratio of the square of the Brunt-Weisler frequency to the square of the effective shear rate is the Richardson number. So the only place where there's instability, according to the linear results, is here at Q of 0 and n squared less than 0, which is the standard convective instability in the absence of shear. And so in the rest of the parameter space outside of this parabola, there's asymptotic growth, which is a weak power law in time. And for smooth Keplerian disk here at Q of 3 halves, the asymptotic growth is extremely weak. So to confirm these results, as well as test for any possible nonlinear effects, we performed local shearing sheet simulations. So this is these are snapshots of the entropy from two of these runs. This is a face-on local patch of the disk, so horizontal corresponding to the radial direction, and this is the azimuthal direction. And this is both with and without shear. Right, so yeah, there's a weak radial gradient, which allows for convective instability. So I'll just run these. So this is without any background shear, so it's like a local patch of a disk in solid body rotation, and there's a weak amount of, you can see the effective shear, so the pressure gradient has to be balanced by a azimuthal velocity, and you can see the effect of that shear. But the average shear is zero, and the convection grows, and the entropy eventually turns over. So this is the same setup, except with the shear set to its Keplerian value, And as you can see, nothing happens. So I'll run this, just let it run again in case you missed it. But the convection appears to be stabilized. So at least at the resolutions that we've run this at, and these I think are at 512 squared, there's no nonlinear effects. So it appears that what the Klarin-Bodenheimer saw is not due to a local instability, and therefore it's either a global instability or there's some numerical effects that they're seeing. And we identified one numerical effect in our simulations, which is growth due to aliasing. And the best way to demonstrate that is to run one of the evolution of one of these linear shearing waves. So this is just a linear perturbation, and it starts out in a leading configuration, and the amplitude peaks here when it's open, and then it evolves into a trailing configuration. And the time-dependent wave vector implies that the radial wavelength shrinks until eventually it's lost at the grid scale. And you can see that the code due to aliasing or undersampling picks up the evolution of these modes again. So you get this repeated evolution that's just numerical. And so the result of that can be overall growth in the perturbation. So this is a linear theory test showing the perturbed surface density as a function of time. The dotted line here is the linear theory result, and these are the colored lines that runs at three different numerical resolutions. And you can see that the code evolves the same solution repeatedly, and you get this overall growth that's entirely artificial. In addition, the growth is larger at lower resolutions since the aliasing occurs more frequently. So we can this is a plot of our observed measured growth rates as a function of this shear parameter, and you can see at this first of all, it demonstrates clearly that the convective instability is suppressed by the differential rotation. The dotted line here is the expected growth rate. This dashed line is the point at which the effective, at which the shear rate begins to exceed the growth rate in the absence of shear. And if you notice this last point, the growth actually decreases with increasing resolution. And so this indicates that some of the growth, at least, is due to this this aliasing effect. So this is one possible explanation for what Klarin-Bodenheimer saw, since most of their runs were at a fairly low resolution, around 128 squared. Switching gears a little bit, these are results from some related work in which we studied vortices in unstratified shearing sheet models. So what's shown here is snapshots of the potential vorticity of the fluid, which is essentially the curl of the velocity divided by the surface density. I'll go ahead and run the movie for that. So again, these are two-dimensional, vertically integrated, and we inject finite amplitude vorticity. Again, this is radius horizontally in azimuth. And as others have found, we get long-lived vortices. And the thing that's new about our simulations is that they're fully compressible. So you can see that the vortices are driving these compressive waves, which steepen into shocks. And these compressive waves provide a significant flux of angular momentum. This run here is at is four scale heights in both directions, and you can see that the vortices are about the order of a scale height in size. And when we first I'll show the plot of alpha, the momentum flux. So this is the normalized Reynolds stress, the familiar alpha parameter of standard disk modeling as a function of time. And you can see that the flux is significant, but it decays with time. So these vortices decay, and the reason that we believe this is due to compressibility, one of the primary ways we demonstrated this was we decreased the size of the box in some runs, and when the box size gets below a scale height, this flux drops dramatically. So the compressibility is playing a key role in the momentum flux. So as I said, it decays as t to the minus 1/2. And as we just heard about in the last talk, these are two-dimensional vortices, which are likely to be unstable in three dimensions. But if the stratification is strong away from the midplane, that may enforce two-dimensional behavior and stabilize these vortices. How much time do I have left? Okay. Well, plenty of time. So in summary then, the answer to the original question is convective instability stabilized by differential rotation appears to be yes. In addition, we find no evidence for nonlinear instability in our local simulations, which implies that the global baroclinic instability is either a global instability or non-existent. And finally, we found that vortices driving compressive waves can provide a significant, albeit decaying, flux of angular momentum.
I might have just missed some details. So in your early simulations with the radial stratification, what were the boundary conditions?
So it was periodic boundary conditions in this direction. So that's the azimuthal direction. And then shearing periodic in the radial direction. So these are the standard shearing box simulations that others have talked about, and
but there's a jump in pressure and
so the
uniform gradient.
The gradient is sinusoidal, so the gradient is periodic.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are 2D. These are vertically
integrated. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
This is a question both to you and to Joe. This is about the vortices that you showed. It looked like, to my unaided eye, that the vortices did not merge. They kind of streamed by each other and sometimes kind of hit each other, but never merged. On Jupiter, I think there is some evidence for merging. Why is this difference appearing in the simulations? If you have any comment, please.
Well, as far as our simulations, they do. Merge, but sometimes it takes a while. So you may have seen some that bounced off each other, and then if you run the simulation for longer, they'll eventually merge. Yeah. The ones that are like in the same path, the same as radius, will merge eventually.
Excuse the chairman's privilege to sharpen that slightly. Do they ever become larger than the sort of Mach 1, than a scale height?
We haven't seen.
You just speak of guess.
Right.
Vortices would have to remain subsonic.
Yeah, they always appear to be less than a scale height or less.
Do you suggest that the decay of these vortices you see in two dimensions might be absent in three dimensions?
So the decay appears to be the due to the driving of the compressive waves, and so. And the decay, I mean, if you ran these like in the midplane, would be quicker because they'd be unstable. So, as far as if it were possible to have two-dimensional flow in a strongly vertical stratification, then I would expect the behavior to be similar. But then it'd be two-dimensional; it'd be the same type of flow as we have here.
Just curious, relating to the boundary condition question, if the pressure gradient or if the gradient was sinusoidal, doesn't that mean that you expect the condition for this, the possible global baroclinic thing, only to be true in 1/2 of the box? Or how did, one side it's increasing, one side it's decreasing, so.
Yeah, so the, I can show you a plot here of the Brunt Weisler frequency is a. So you end up with a Brunt Weisler frequency that's negative. Well, you can choose the parameters of the model so it's positive or negative, and there's two minima, which is where the convection grows. Yeah.
Any other questions? I'd like to ask you one more question as somebody who's paid his dues in shearing coordinates. The question of the angular momentum flux going away as the box is made smaller in the radial direction, I take it you mean.
Well, we reduced it in both directions. We haven't varied them separately, but.
Okay.
That would be the. I would assume that would be the relevant direction, but
it's not completely clear to me because if you have shearing periodic boundary conditions, and apart from aliasing and determined grid scale, the wave keeps wrapping up, and at least in linear theory, its amplitude continues to increase adiabatically as the wave gets shorter. The frequency of the acoustic waves going up, and associated with that normally is an increased flux. But if you also reduce the azimuthal scale, then
you
limit it. Anyway, it's a technical point.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you, everyone, speakers, questioners, listeners, alike.
Those of you who have posters, please be sure to pick them up because ITP will destroy them if you don't.
Before we all disband, I would like to thank all the speakers for the whole being here for the whole week, and also those who have been here for part of the time for their contributions, and all the participants equally for their contribution in the conference. And this is also the right point to express our gratitude towards KITP for hosting the conference, and to thank the staff for their assistance, unobtrusive but efficient. There's in particular Monica, Sharon, and are they waiting?
At least one is here.
So I mentioned several people who have worked mostly behind the scenes, and of course in particular Jocelyn, who has been more visible and has been very effective in keeping our schedule on time with the aid of the bell. Thank you very much.